Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. My guest today is Chris Fowler, founder and executive director of Syracuse First, an organization dedicated to local business development and encouraging people to buy local. Chris recently published an opinion piece in the Syracuse Post-Standard under the headline, "Changing Our Local Economy Starts With You." Chris, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's been a little over 2 years since you were last on the program and we chatted. I wanted to know first, what are the most important developments in the buy local effort and movement during that time period, both here in Syracuse, but also more generally across the country?
Well, I think it's both the changes are both nationally and locally, they're the same. More and more people are understanding what this is about. They're understanding the economic power that comes from locally owned independent businesses, thinking about procurement, thinking about place and why it matters in terms of creating a thriving, resilient economy.
And you folks had this event, the New Economy Summit, recently. Can you tell me what that was about and what the most important things that came out of that, you think?
Yeah, this just recently we had our first ever sort of business conference, and it was called the New Economy Summit. We had 150 attendees. We invited folks to come from around the state and around the country who are experts in local economic development, in land use planning, in new models of business development and structuring of businesses. We had a focus on B corporations.
I'll tell everybody what B corporation is.
So a B corporation is a brand new business designation similar to an LLC or an S corp, but it's defined as a benefit corporation, and the measurements for a successful business are different than they would be in a normal matter. So it takes in consideration your use of natural resources, your community engagement, different sort of measurements for a healthy business, not just single bottom line profit orientation.
Okay. And what were the most important takeaways from this that you think
One of the most important things was the fact that people saw other people at this event who were curious, who were engaged, who wanted to know more, who already knew a lot. And I think, you know, a big part of what we try to talk about is collaboration, thinking about this, you know, what does a new economy look like? What does a healthy economy and a healthy community in Central New York look like? And it has people working together, shifting, you know, old paradigms to think about ways people can collaborate. You know, if it's something as simple as multiple coffee shops, you know, ordering cups together to reduce the cost, to promote each other, which is it's a different way of thinking about growing businesses and creating a healthy community.
And the variety of businesses you mentioned there at the outset kind of leads into the other thing I wanted to ask you about early on, which is this concept of sustainability. It's been a really, really big concept in recent years. It's getting applied in a lot of different areas, from the environment to financial budgeting to, you know, gardening. I mean, you name it, sustainability comes up. So how do you see the buy local movement fitting into the sustainability concept and movement more generally?
Right. Well, to your point, sustainability has been used, you know, in everything. And everybody is trying to declare that they are more sustainable than the next person and are, you know, this project is the most sustainable ever. The way the buy local movement and the think local movement fits into it is it is predicated on sustainability. It's predicated on efficiency. So whether it's efficiency in the use of natural resources, so just thinking logistically about sourcing. So if I'm a restaurant and I'm looking for certain products for my restaurant, you know, that I use every single day, if I'm getting tomatoes in the summer from California or Texas or Florida, you know, there's a transportation sustainability measure that's there, as opposed to being able to go to Cayuga County or the western part of Onondaga County, anywhere nearby. So it's as simple as that in terms of like natural resources and sustainability. Also, the efficiency of a dollar. The idea of that a dollar has a sustainability value too. So if I'm putting a dollar in a savings account or, you know, into my mortgage, and it's at a bank that is a multinational bank, what happens to that dollar after I put it into that institution? If I'm using a local bank or a credit union, I know that the efficiency of that dollar is going to be much higher because it's going to be returned back into the community, which it started. So, you know, sustainability and efficiency are actually the foundations of the Think Local movement.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse First Executive Director Chris Fowler. Well, I was wondering, are there some types of goods for which the philosophy of buying local more naturally resonates with people as opposed to other kinds of goods?
Well, food is obviously the most understandable. Food is, I call it a gateway drug to the local first movement, because you can tell the difference between an apple from that you can pick off a tree if you drive down into the valley at any number of places, as opposed to one that's shipped in and you bought at a grocery store. Just the experience alone changes the flavor and the quality of the experience, and the health benefits are significant as well. So food is really the first way for people to really understand this from text or from taste and quality. And from there, you know, that sort of is the beginning of the understanding of the comparing, you know, food from 20 miles away to food from 1,300 miles away. And you just start to think about how you, what your financial decisions that you're making on a daily basis. So, you know, most things, unfortunately, or just for whatever reason, are made, not a lot of things are made in central New York. They once may have, but they're not as readily available anymore. And, you know, that's not what, you know, that doesn't create necessarily a barrier for making better decisions. That is sort of a reason to not do it, to try to say why it doesn't make any sense. But there are plenty of things that you can get that are produced here more than people realize, and food is really the first step in going in that direction.
And I wonder how it plays into the idea of services as opposed to products. So one type of service that struck me as you were talking was the seller of the thing. So I might be buying my refrigerator that's made in China. That's going to be made in China regardless of where I buy it. But maybe it matters whether I buy it from a local distributor as opposed to a national one.
It makes a significant difference. So, you know, there have been studies, dozens of studies that have been done over the years to look at the comparison of economic impact of dollars spent at local independent stores. So regardless of if it's a refrigerator that was made in Asia and you bought it from a locally owned company as opposed to a national chain, the economic impact is significant, even if it's the same product, because ownership in this sense makes a big difference. And again, they're returning that money and turning it into an investment that has an outcome of an improved quality of life for your community and for yourself.
And I'm wondering also, does an area like Syracuse, given the economic struggles that it's had, its history, is that better suited for this message and an emphasis on buying local and to use local businesses compared with an area that's booming? You know, I'm wondering whether the message kind of makes more sense at a place like this than, I don't know, Portland or someplace like, you know, that we associate with this boom.
Well, in part, the reason why communities that are really thriving economically is because they've built this into their culture, into their philosophy, into their policy as well. Oregon has recently passed a local priority. So they have given locally owned Oregon-based businesses the same kind of benefit that New York State gives to minority and women-owned businesses to encourage people to source from businesses within the state, again, because, you know, up to four times as much of that money is recirculated in that economy, which at the end of the day has a direct impact on businesses across the state, on municipalities' ability to provide services that they're chartered to provide, to create the types of jobs that have wages that can sustain people's lives. They're really direct and dramatic impacts.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Syracuse First Executive Director Chris Fowler, and we've been talking about the Buy Local movement. Well, I wanted to ask you a few questions now that get into perhaps some of the tensions that might be involved in this movement. Sometimes the local alternatives are more expensive to the consumer than the cheaper import. I guess I would call this the Walmart, you know, phenomenon or the Walmart challenge. So how do you keep the buy local emphasis from seeming a little boutique-y to people
right.
at times?
And that is a challenge. There's some mischaracterization of it. And so what we've done as an organization is try to encourage people to make a shift of 10%. So not, you know, we're not asking people to change their lives entirely. The reality is that a community like Central New York is not self-sufficient. It needs things coming from the outside. We just don't have all the goods and services that are necessary to provide for a full functioning economy. So we ask people 1 in 10 times. So if it's, you know, lunch once out of 10 times, think about a locally owned restaurant. Go to give it a try. If it's paper products, think of somebody who is providing office supplies, you know, whatever it might be. If it's a bank account, if you're a business owner and you want to get a line of credit, go to a credit union or a regional or a local bank. You know, there's any number of ways to try to move 10% of your existing spending to locally owned independent businesses. And we're not asking people to spend any more money than they already are. We're not asking municipalities to chip in any single way. This is about how do we make this small shift and have a direct impact on the community.
And the other piece of that would be, how do you avoid the appearance, if not the reality, of, in a sense, taking sides in consumers' decisions or advocating for one business as opposed to another, to go back to the idea of buying the Chinese refrigerator locally as opposed to nationally. You know, Ray Lynn's going to love that message. Sears may not so much. You know, so how do you avoid that?
Well, you know, if there's – here's the reality. People – the owners of Ray Lynn's are – potentially your neighbors. They could be your friends. There's a chance that you've come across them at some point around Central New York. If you try to get in touch with the president of Sears, I wish you good luck. If you were to ask any of the executives of Sears what their interest in the health of this community is, I'm not sure what the answer would be, but I'm sure it's not the same as the folks at Ray Lynn's would be, since they actually live in this community. So, you know, I think we need to move the idea from business owners being explicitly, you know, profit makers and job, this quote-unquote job creators. These are people that are in the community. They're community builders. They're friends. They're family. They go to the same – their kids might go to the same schools that yours do. They may go to the same house of worship. It's changing the way that we think about it. And it actually is changing it sort of back to the way that is, I think, more historically correct, which is people supporting each other.
And we talked about this concept of sustainability before. There's another trending concept in recent years, globalization, and that may cause some tensions. I mean, it's a theme that you find again, just like sustainability, almost everywhere. It's certainly big in this building here at the Maxwell School. So how does the Buy Local movement fit in with globalization?
Well, you know, I think most of the folks within the local movement think of a healthy global economy as many micro local economies that are healthy and thriving and interconnected. You know, again, you know, we don't see this community as living in isolation. You know, we are part of a region, which is part of a state, which is part of a northeastern quarter, which is part of the United States. So I don't think that there is necessarily, when thought through, a difference between thinking about what globalization is and what localization is. The approach is that where does the generation come from? One is a sort of a collaborative effort, and the other is a very top-down orientation in terms of the economy. I think The numbers illustrate what that paradigm looks like, and it's continuing gaps in wealth for people. All the turmoil that's happening across the globe at the moment. There are consequences to the decisions that we've been making for a long time, and this is just a change in the way we move forward.
And there's another aspect I wanted to push you on a little bit, and it taps into the concerns about social justice and fairness that I hear often embedded in the arguments for buying local, and I'm hearing them a little bit here from you, too. I've heard some economists say that if we're concerned about the lives of the disadvantaged in other areas of the world, the best thing that we can do for them is to buy the stuff that they make. So, again, is there some kind of tension here with the buy local emphasis and that approach to making other people's lives better?
Fundamentally, that is a correct assertion, but it also is a little disingenuous because those same folks are trying to disengage responsibility from a lot of actors involved with creating those kind of situations across the globe. Again, coming back to the idea of sustainability, natural resources are more scarce than they've ever been on our globe, and there's more of a challenge to find them, and we continue to see that with our current battle with people taking sides on the issue of fracking in this region particularly. But I think that when folks promote that idea, they're being a little disingenuous to that, to the broader message. I think healthy local economies in those disadvantaged areas is a strong thing, and how you do that is provide structure and support for them to be able to create that the same way you do it, here at home.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to The Campbell Conversations, and my guest is Chris Fowler, Executive Director of Syracuse First. Coming back to your piece now on the Syracuse Post-Standard, you had a provocative phrase regarding the standard efforts that local governments make to lure in outside businesses through subsidies and tax breaks. You referred to it as creating a cycle of the one-night-stand economy. And I thought about that, working with that metaphor. What would Destiny USA be, in your view, then? Was that an instance of fatal attraction?
I haven't figured out a way to characterize it exactly, but here's what I'll say. I don't want to throw, anything into an already blazing fire with a debate of destiny and carousel and the decisions that have been made. I will say that, that I think the discussion has been a little off. I think we are thinking about economic development and creating healthy economy through sales tax dollars, through the number of people that come through that institution and spend dollars that are from different parts of the state or different parts of the world. And I think those are there's definitely benefits to that. But I think when we talk about how we develop and create a really healthy, thriving, sustainable, to use the term again, resilient economy, is we are creating more sectors, stronger sectors in the community. A retail-driven economy is not economy that sticks around for very long, and it continues to need other people to feed it. So I don't think that through retail is necessarily always the best mechanism to use municipal dollars. The one night stand economy is a serious issue. Do we want to build a healthy relationship with our economy that means something, that is that connects people to the economy? So I ask a fundamental question when I talk to folks: do you think the economy serves people, or do people serve the economy? And this is that's the question that gets at this idea of a one night stand as opposed to a relationship based economy.
And do you have any particular views on Governor Cuomo's tax-free New York proposal that's getting a lot of discussion right now?
I think it certainly seems interesting, and I think there are the idea of the nanotech center and the growth of the nanotech sector and high technology in the Albany area is a good example of what can potentially happen. I think we certainly have perception issues about economic development and business attraction and retention here in New York State. You know, I, again, the Local First Movement and myself, we really propose how do we create homegrown solutions to this. You know, here in Syracuse, we have a Syracuse Tech. The technology garden is filled with businesses. There are more businesses that want to move in there that are at that incubator stage. The student sandbox that's down there and a number of other projects that are encouraging entrepreneurship here in this region are really what is going to lead to creating those kind of long-term jobs and investment in this community that are going to be meaningful. And if this helps facilitate that, then I think that, you know, it will have great outcomes. I think we have to do something about municipal overlap and duplication. In addition to that, not just tax-free zones, we have some real structural issues that we have to deal with. But you know, the fact that we're doing anything, I'm always encouraged by.
And before we get to the three questions at the end, where should folks go if they want to find out more about what your organization is up to?
Well, the easiest thing to do is just go to our website, syracusefirst.org. Mm-hmm. We're all over social media as well. You can find us on Facebook for people that are on Facebook at Syracuse First, and at Twitter. We're pretty active on Twitter at Syracuse First also. We like to post some photos from ourselves and other people on our Instagram, so feel free to join us there. But you know, our first point of contact, I would always recommend going through the internet.
Okay, and the three questions, last time you answered them from the perspective of the Buy Local movement. I'm going to put you personally on the spot this time, and ask them just for you. First, what's the title of the chapter of life you're currently living?
The title of the chapter of life that I'm living, More Than Lucky.
Second, what's your worst trait?
My worst trait is me and the clock have a very unfriendly relationship.
And finally, what professional or creative achievement in your life so far has surprised you the most?
Well, most recently, I was surprised that myself and Syracuse First were able to pull off the New Economy Summit with such success. Like I said, we had speakers from across the country, over 150 attendees, and I think everyone went away with something. And, you know, if you've never done something like that, you don't know if it's going to work. And so I was really enthusiastic about that.
That was Chris Fowler. Chris, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO, Conversations in the Public Interest.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher. Associate producers include Bethany Wallowender, Kelly Coleman, John Fornoff, Stephanie Lee, Hennish Pullickle, and Sophia Celeste Tate, and recording engineer Tom Fazio. For more information on the Campbell Conversations, visit WRVO.org.